Hi, Odyssey fandom. I'm Jesse, editor of Focus on the Family, Clubhouse Magazine.
And I'm Bob, producer of the Adventures in Odyssey Club. Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
You know, Bob, we've had a lot of memorable villains on Odyssey. Who can forget Dr. Regis Blacker?
And there's Philip Glossman, Mr. Charles, Hank Murray.
Oh, and what about the bad guys turned good guys like Richard Maxwell and recently, Maury Rydell?
But even though he hasn't appeared very often, the award for longest running villain goes to... The Chairman.
The Chairman first arrived in the Novacom finale, Exit, where he uttered his famous line, "It's over. For now."
After that, he wasn't heard from or even mentioned until more than 20 years later when he was revealed to be behind the events of 28 Hours.
In both appearances, the Chairman was voiced by actor Brian Cummings, but the Chairman certainly isn't Brian's only role on Odyssey.
That's right, Jesse. Brian's played characters from Christopher Columbus to the local soccer coach to Emperor Nero to Jesus. I recently talked to Brian about playing these diverse roles and his most recognizable voice of all.
Which is...
I'll give you a hint. If you've watched movies on VHS or DVD, you've probably heard Brian.
I've watched them on both, so I've got to hear this interview.
We've got Brian Cummings on the phone, calling from Castle Rock, Colorado, right up the road, actually. Brian, thanks for being on the podcast today.
Tis quite a pleasure. Very nice to hear from you.
Cool. You've
played, I have to stop in next time I'm there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You do. I have not met you. Some of the guys have had you in the studio, but this is the first time we've actually talked. And I understand that you have played various voices on Adventures in Odyssey, going all the way back to 1992. The first one. Do you remember what the first one was?
Boy, in chronology, no. That big word, chronology. Oh, over time, no. They all kind of, they're like children. I haven't seen them for a while. I don't remember when I last saw them.
Well, the first one was the title character in Columbus, The Grand Voyage. Do you remember how you got...
Columbus, yeah.
Yeah, do you remember how you got connected with us?
That was marvelous. It's interesting, too, because when we were in L.A., going from cartoons to various things back and forth and stuff, I had friends that had been on Odyssey, and I was kind of envious of them. So it was really kind of a thrill. I was actually recommended by somebody to be on the show.
Yeah. Well, we've worked with another prolific voice actor named Cummings, Jim Cummings. Fans will remember him as King Lawrence in Darien's Rise. Any relation?
The weird thing is somebody keeps going online and changing Wikipedia to say that we are brothers and we're both from, I've never been to this. But there's a strange thing from my family history. My sister's really big into the Cummings family history. And in our line of, and I'm sure, obviously at some point we are, it's just that we don't know where if we go to but there's a graveyard in upstate New York where two men in the 1800s came from Ireland. John Cummings came over to Ireland in the same year. John Cummings, the other John Cummings, came to the same town near Buffalo, New York. Both of them are buried in the same graveyard. And from what we can tell, looking at family genealogy, we can't yet find any way that they're related. Obviously, they too. So, there you go. Yeah.
Well, people have heard your voice in promos for Disney, Sony, and Paramount.
Yeah.
Not to mention the announcer for the Last Chance Detective audio series. What's a promo session like compared to, say, the kind of acting you do for Adventures in Odyssey?
Again, the difference is we still have fun. It's just that doesn't get recorded. We still mess around with and joke and have a good time. It's a very gregarious business to be in. Voiceover has a lot of respect. And it's always the funny thing about promos and commercials is if somebody does a byline for a commercial, that can live for the rest of your life. I'm a little bit scratchy-throated today. I apologize. But one of the things I did for Disney, and I did many, many, many things of long form and other forms, but it's interesting, the most memorable thing that I did, which may not be as obvious to audiences today because we don't use the medium as much as we once did, was when Disney released videotapes, then later DVDs of movies. There was a place where we would break away from what the content was and do promos for other projects. And I got to say, and after all of that, I say, and now our feature presentation.
There you
and
go.
That has lived on and on and on and on. And people come up and say, do your presentation. It's like, it's the easiest thing to do because there's just one line as an announcer, but it lives on. So kind of, if you think about this stuff as a performer, the other thing is the things that you oftentimes remember as the performer are, you remember the things that maybe other people don't remember because they were unique and unusual and fun and may not be as successful. People may not have heard them as much. So I have projects. We did there was a show called Marsupialami, and they had a little 1 minute segment in the middle of the show where I did everything from an Eskimo pizza delivery guy who would deliver the pizza to your igloo or it would be free. I did Badly Animated Men, where I played a villain and Gary Owens played the hero. And the joke from that was that the hero was like a bad cartoon. So he could only punch in one direction and he was only could be seen from the profile. We did a spoof commercial for Spud TV for couch potatoes. And those are things that nobody gets to hear because they're so kind of isolated, but they were so much fun to do.
Well, what about some things that maybe higher profile characters that you've played in cartoons or other areas?
Well, so yeah, probably depending upon your audience, in the villain stage, I ended up for some reason doing a lot of villains. I did Dr. Mindbender, the evil Cobra interrogator on the G.I. Joe series. And G.I. Joe was an interesting show in that it was sponsored by the toy company, and they did 65 episodes, a massive amount of shows, and had a very, very huge cast. So it was an interesting thing. Of all the shows that I worked on, we spent more time in studio. You hung out with the rest of the cast more than a lot of shows. So you kind of became much more acquainted with the people you worked with. You were in and out and said hi, and we liked everybody, but we were all busy. So G.I. Joe was great because you really had a great opportunity to hang out with the rest of the people in the cast,
yeah,
hang out with the gang.
It's interesting to hear you say that, Brian, because so often we are, I wouldn't say unique, but very rare in Adventures in Odyssey doing that, recording family style. But it's neat to hear that that you have other opportunities to do that.
And that show, oddly enough, is, to be honest about the show, from the standpoint of the animation, because they had so much to do and they had to get this all done within their budget, when we did the show, the animation was kind of jerky because for young people who are interested, animation is a number of pictures that flash by really quickly and gradually move. So the idea of movement means that you have a lot of pictures and each one next to the other creates the movement. When you have fewer, then the movement's a little jerky. And they did that because they had to save money on the show. And so when you did the show, you thought, I don't know, this is going to be huge. And the fun thing about it was, is that kids loved the adventure. The heroes were really good heroes. The villains, even when they were villains, were kind of fun, even if they were evil. And so especially young boys loved that show so much. I remember being at a fan con for G.I. Joe fans, and they still do them every year, and the shows are back in the 80s. I remember being at a fan con, and I joked that of all the toys that kids got from that show, they sold an aircraft carrier that was so big that it was bigger than your coffee table. It'd be like, Dad can't park in the garage anymore because it's the only place where we can put your aircraft carrier. Obviously, it was expensive. And I joked about it at the national convention, and about half a dozen grown fathers at the same time, almost in unison, said, I've still got mine. So the fans are still as rabid today as when they were kids.
Well, I had them when I was a boy, too. I had all the various, vehicles. You had the chopper and you had the Jeep and the scuba stuff.
Yeah.
And I had the guy with the kung fu grip. I had, and they had the fuzzy hair, anyway, but we're not here just to talk about G.I. Joe today, although that is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Back to Odyssey. You have said that the slave owner in the Underground Railroad was your hardest Odyssey role to play. Why was that?
Well, when you play a comic villain, it's one of those things you don't take them so seriously, but because of the subject matter, it was very sensitive, and there was a lot of difficulty at that time, and there was a lot of rough emotions, and it was a very, very problematic situation. Sometimes it's a character that you have to play goes so much against your own ethics. It's just hard to be somebody who's that evil. To reach that point in yourself, because this is a character you wanted to be. And also our audience is a young audience. And so you want to portray the character with the evil nature of the guy has to show through. By the same token, you don't want to make it painfully difficult for them either. So you have to kind of find a fine line where you convey all that at the same time. And so it's hard, always hard to play something that goes that much against your grain.
Yeah.
Unless you're having fun doing it, unless you're spoofing it a little bit.
You know? Mentioned that you play a lot of villains, and some of them, I imagine, are very over the top. How do you dial it back when you're playing somebody who may be more of a historical figure than somebody who, you know, is from outer space?
It's really weird. I use visualization for lots. I use a ruler, so mm-hmm. you know, so I can go 12 inches, and if it's like too much, I say, okay, I'm going to go back to about 4 inches. And the visual always helps. So that's just how it works for me. But yeah.
Yeah. You actually played several parts in that Underground Railroad episode, including the sidekick to the bad guy, a delivery courier, a worker at a post office, and a doctor. So how do you keep them straight? When you're asked to create multiple voices, is there a trick to that?
There are several tricks. And each character has kind of like a key sound. I remember when I was, and this is not related to the Odyssey show, but I went to a place in LA called the Preview House, where they sampled different commercials and also products with an audience that rated them. And the guy that handled that wanted to be an announcer, and he would be standing, be walking, and say, if you got your button, now look at this. And did you see that? And at the end of everything, he just said, all right, fine. Now this time I want you to, all right, fine. And I called him Mr. All Right Fine. So I lock into Mr. All Right Fine with that phrase. So you find a sound. Maybe somebody has a lisp or a certain laugh or a certain key. And so it's just kind of like that opens the door. So one sound leads to another sound. Another one, there was a commercial when I was a kid, long, long, long ago. It was for a dog food. It's how I learned my New York accent. And it was before they even did lips and made the lips move. It just was like these little, they were actually little ducks, and they were walking around the soundstage. This great big huge dog was eating the dog food that makes its own gravy, I think. And these, so the dialogue from the ducks was, look out for that really ugly, that scary dog. I'm scared. It's a horrible dog. And the little girl duck voiced first. She's going, dog, what's a dog? I don't know. I don't see a dog. Do you see a dog? Where's the dog? And my New York accent came from that word dog. Became my key to, so it's just as you find one thing that locks in the character and makes that character different than any other character, so it kind of tunes your brain where to go, you know.
Yeah, well, okay, you got one part that you played that I imagine was very difficult, and that was the part of Jesus in several episodes of Odyssey,
yes.
including an adventure in Bethany. And Jesus is a notoriously difficult part to cast. How did you approach that important role?
The essence of Jesus, of the Savior, is that he is, first of all, you can't capture the fact that he's perfect, but so what you do have to capture that the phrase it says in the scriptures is that God is love, and Jesus is the perfect Son of God, and he is the example of perfect love. So you look at a character, and the most important thing that you want to know is that character not only understands your pain, but has empathy for you. So the character is very soft and very caring, and even when he is strong, he's still strong from a position of the goodness of a perfect being who perfectly loves you. And so that's to say that I captured that. I didn't really capture that. I just did the best I could. And I think the other thing you do say, if I were to be like him, that as a life goal, this is a serious moment here. If I were to be like him, then I would be concerned and caring in everything I do. And everything that motivated me would be for the welfare of those people around me that I love.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you did a great job, and we've talked about a few of the many parts you played in the show. Is there one that stands out? Do you have a favorite?
We talk about the evil chairman. His challenge was that he's evil, but because of all those over the top characters that I played, is he had to be evil, but it had to be an internalized evil. His control was so. Sometimes being a broad character is so much easier because you can swing wide. And if you get close to it and it still feels good, to be something like that, the evil had to be both there but restrained enough that he was always in control. So when one thing pulls against another thing, those are the characters that are interesting and fun to play.
Oh, that's fun. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the chairman in a minute, but since we're looking back already here, this might be a good time for a totally random question about your high school years. You didn't know this one was coming, Brian. It's called a
TRQ.
and it was provided by a listener known on the message boards as Baking Butterfly. And Baking Butterfly wants to know, what was your favorite subject in high school?
Oh, acting out.
How many credits was that worth?
A lot of performers. It was also interesting. Remember the actor who did the "Hi, guy" on the other side of the bathroom mirror? A character in commercials a long time ago, and maybe our young audience wouldn't remember. But the deal about being performers in school, I think a lot of the people who are performers were people who were not necessarily the outgoing people. They were the people that were most insecure, because we would live through our characters. And there's a secret if you're in high school and you kind of feel like maybe you're not one of the cool kids. If you do something that's entertaining or funny around other people and you make a fool of yourself, people usually will go, "Oh, that Cummings, he's being silly again." So rather than being suave and sophisticated, and the guys that weren't so popular oftentimes became the entertainers because we could use our craft to win the audience. And if people think I did that stupid thing because I meant to do that, then they think, "Oh, there's a funny person." If they think I did that stupid thing because I was clumsy and not very socially adept, then they go, "Oh, yeah, okay, he's kind of a weird one." So you can be weird in a funny way and get an audience. And I'm sure if Robin Williams were here today, that's what he would say. He would say, I was acting out. I did all this funny stuff and people laughed and they loved me. And then I didn't have to feel insecure.
Well, then let's take Baking Butterflies question and twist it a little bit, since we really didn't get a subject here. Is there a particular class that you found it more enjoyable to act out in? I mean, was it English class? Was it history class? Did you break them up in math class?
I kind of goofed off in all my classes. So from the time I was in kindergarten, I did silly stuff. I sang louder than the other kids. I also had a history teacher who fancied himself a comedian, and he would do his own versions of lines from popular comedy acts at the time. So I was fortunate to have some people around me that were artistically encouraging. But everything from on the playground to various classes, arts and crafts classes were really great because they were noisy classes and you could make noise in those classes. And then at a certain point, I discovered drama, and that was because I got some social interaction. I think I also liked the band just because I liked music. There you go.
Well, that's great. That's great. Thank you, Baking Butterfly, for the question. And thank you, Brian, for your honesty and your that's a fun story. Of course, we don't necessarily encourage kids to be the class clown and to break everybody up. And, yeah, there's a time and a place, right? You would.
Okay. You can do gentle things that will get you attention and get you a chuckle.
Yeah.
And I just actually, for being an old guy now, I just got inducted into my high school's Hall of Fame, which was really kind of cool. I spent
Congratulations.
A couple of days there.
That's
and
great.
We talked to kids about their future and about what they wanted to do. Oddly enough, there's another voice actor. I don't know if you've worked with or had Wally Wingard on, but it turns out that Wally is younger than I am, but went to the same high school as I did, way back in the wilds of South Dakota.
Wow.
And got inducted into that Hall of Fame like 10 years before I did.
Wally has been on Odyssey. Yes. When you have a show that's almost 1,000 episodes old, we've had, I would say pretty much everybody, but everybody who's anybody, right?
The creme de la creme and even me.
Yeah, so let's get back to the chairman again, because I mean, the chairman is one of those characters, and I'm not sure when you first came on that people would have naturally thought, "Hey, that's the guy who does the voice of the chairman." But they've loved to hate you for a number of years now. You first appeared in Exit, which was an episode recorded in 2002. When creating this character, Brian, director Marshall Younger asked you to go more majestic and less street level. Remember how that evolution occurred. But do you remember anything special about the first chairman session?
You do. In our business, you have to telegraph that there's evilness there. The underlying evilness has to peek out. Where it's funny, in movies and in television and in cartoons, you know the evil people because they give themselves away, and that's part of the art of theatrics. In real life, you may not know the evil people because they are very good at in order to be successful as an evil person, you have to get away with it. So you could be the nicest person in the world in public and not be. So you have to be able to let those things peek through. And so what I originally did, and I think it's a good thing for me, I tend to do that. If I'm going to start playing a character that I don't know, I'll start with it broader because I can always, especially if in the audition stage, if I'm reading for something and I overplay it a little bit and they like the performance, then they'll pull me back. If I underplay it, they might think that that's all I can do and decide, ah, let me see if I can find somebody who can play this evil guy. So you want to make sure that they know that you can get what they want you to do. So it's good for you to go a little too far, even if you risk sometimes somebody saying, yeah, he's too broad and goes for somebody else. So that's how it started, is I think I went much more evil, and then he pulled me back from it. So there's that little bit where you want people to know that you're sneaky enough to get away with it.
Yeah,
and that you, most people around you in the cast wouldn't believe that you're the evil guy until you reveal it. So that's that kind of duality thing that you want to do. But think of it like a magnet. You have a positive side and a negative side, and you want to make people be able to see that that's a complete picture. You got both positive charge and negative charge in the same character.
Has anybody asked you about that character in the decades in between? Because I'll tell you, they've had lots of questions for us.
That's cool. Honestly, no. This is the first time, but that's okay. You know, sometimes I'm one of those guys, I don't think my natural persona would make people, a lot of times people are like, you play that guy? Come on, you gotta be kidding me, really? So that's also the thing about having some degree of voice flexibility. My normal, it's in the morning here, so my voice is probably a little lower than I would be in the afternoon. So a lot of people just don't realize that I'm that character because that part of my voice is not what I use normally when I talk. It's a little lighter most of the time. So that's that part about, but that's why they call it acting. So we get a chance to be characters different than ourselves. And that's part of the joy too, is to be able to be that way.
Well, yeah. Now that you've gotten another taste of the chairman, if you were in the role of the writer, what would you like to see happen with the chairman? Do you have any other devious plans coming along?
It would be neat if we had a story where you let the chairman go out and let his evil side be revealed to some cohorts in a much larger capacity, with maybe an even bigger nefarious scheme. The thing that's beautiful about the chairman too, though, is there's so much mystery surrounding him. So if I did that, maybe it would lose its charm because you'd see too much.
Yeah. Well, Brian, we appreciate you joining us today, and we look forward to hearing from the chairman again. Hopefully he'll finally be brought to justice at some point so we can all sleep better. But we don't know what the future holds for him, and we're just grateful that you got so many different voices inside of you that we can use you in a lot of different ways.
Thank you so much.
You can hear Brian's work on dozens of Odyssey episodes, including the recent 28 Hours. And you just never know when the chairman will unleash his next evil scheme.
Check out a list of some of the episodes with Brian on our website, and you can hear all of them in the club.
That's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation of Focus on the Family.
Visit AdventuresInOdyssey.com for those episodes or to join the club. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day is an adventure.
Adventures in Odyssey has taken generations of children on an exciting journey, all the while sharing biblical principles and activating their imaginations. Now, in 2024, we'll be airing our 1,000th episode. To celebrate, we're inviting every member of the Odyssey family to join us for one grand party. This spectacular two-day event is packed with fun and excitement for Adventures in Odyssey fans of every age. Partygoers will enjoy an unmatched, immersive experience into the town of Odyssey. Meet and greets with cast and crew, Q&A sessions, trivia contests, and more. The party is topped off with a live episode recording starring fan favorite characters. It's all happening on August 2nd and 3rd in beautiful Colorado Springs, Colorado. Tickets for One Grand Party are going fast. Learn more at onegrandparty.com.